And we're back on the Refs Call, driven by D. Patrick Nissan. I'm Brad Klein. Happy you could join us here on 97.7. Listen to theref.com and the WREF mobile app. We're tapping into the Brinker's Jewelers Hotline. My good buddy and college basketball guru, Rocco Miller, is here on WREF to talk about Southern Indiana and to talk about UE getting ready for 2025-2026. Who's counting? 69 days away. That's at least my tally right now. The start of USI men's basketball, roughly that for UE as well. I know Rocco's counting. Rocco, really appreciate the time. How are we doing?
Doing great, Brad. Great to be back on with you. Feels like we just had this call last summer, and now we're a whole year later. Time flies in college basketball, that's for sure. How have you been?
All good. I've been counting down the days, yeah, for the start of the season, but also for this call, and I feel like this is almost the unofficial start of the season whenever you're able to come on the program. Seriously, can't thank you enough. You know, one thing that you know a lot about is college basketball, specifically the scheduling, and I want to ask you a lot about USI and UE schedules, but first I'll ask you this, because the talk of the town for the past few years, ever since USI reclassified to Division I, has been, when will the Aces and the Screaming Eagles play? And it just hasn't happened. Since you are a scheduling guru, I've got to ask you, why aren't we seeing this game imminently? I know there have been talks, but what is stopping this game from happening?
That's so great that you started with this question, Brad, because I actually just got done writing a piece for the brand new Basket Under Review platform ran by Trilly Donovan. That article is actually going to come out Friday, the 29th, which is tomorrow based on when we're recording this. And I think, you know, the big thing I thought, and the article is based on the six schools who are suddenly eligible for the NCAA tournament. So that, of course, includes USI. So there's a good chunk of the article just about the Screaming Eagles. And, you know, one of the things I noticed in my research and just being more familiar with scheduling is when David Raglin took over Evansville that first year, they finished 352nd in KenPom. I think going into that year in general, they knew they weren't going to be good. And Southern Indiana came in, you know, quite honestly, at that point in time, a Division II powerhouse with some good ingredients still on the roster. Of course, they ended up blowing out Southern Illinois in that season and a big win over Indiana State as well. You know, I just think Evansville looked at it and said, no, thank you. And I think the last three off seasons, it's been a little bit similar. And, you know, you would have thought maybe going into this year would be the time to do it because Evansville, although they did still finish near the bottom of the valley, they ended up, you know, with a great player in Pizzotto and all that, but he ends up transferring. They have to replace a lot of guys again. So I just think every offseason since Southern Indiana has been Division I, it's a more on Evansville, just outside looking in, to make it happen. I think USI is chomping at the bit to play the thing, but Evansville just needs to be confident in their team to sign off on it. And in an inner city game as well, you know, you would have ADs involved. Now, most basketball is all scheduling is all controlled at the head coaching level, as I think it should be. Their jobs are on the line with a lot of it. But when you put those games together, the ADs should get involved. Even the president should get involved to make it happen. Perhaps it's more bureaucratic than I even know about. But I think just pure basketball, Evansville has scheduled as if they're not going to be very good the last 3 years.
Yeah, Rocco, you're giving us some great insight here. I've got one more question about USI UE, and that's this, that if you ask the UE people, they're saying USI is ducking them. If you ask the USI people, they're saying UE is ducking them. I know that the Aces have offered the Screaming Eagles a 2-for-1. They've offered to buy them into the Ford Center. Southern Indiana is waiting for an even offer, a home-and-home, a 2-and-2, like the one that USI is finishing this year against Indiana State. Who's right in that valuation? Because I know that Missouri Valley Conference, it's a much better league than the Ohio Valley Conference. So on the one hand, I see UE's point. On the other hand, I see USI finishing a 2-and-2 with Indiana State. So it's hard.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. That is a lot of the politics that go on with how it gets done. Yeah, they could always just go play it. It needs to be in the city, so I guess there's no other choice to play it on a neutral site. But I think it's such a ridiculous reason to get held up. In scheduling, the OVC, where it's at today, being one of the bottom five Division I leagues just by performance measurements, you know, teams at the higher, you know, end of the Missouri Valley, let's say it's Drake, Bradley, Murray State, whoever, they're fighting for the opportunity to just buy a team around Southern Indiana's ranking from last year. You know, anybody 300 plus. I see schedule posts all the time. I have conversations all the time. You know, who's still looking that's not going to be very good. So, you know, Southern Indiana can call anybody and get a paycheck. So I think for them to offer Evansville the ability to just come play a game for free or do a series for no money, that in general, that's a great offer for Evansville, because if Evansville is trying to replace a USI opportunity with an equal opportunity, it's really hard to find. Because there's just not that many teams that are 300 to 364, which is where we're at now with the amount of D1 teams. And if you are, you know you're worth a lot of money and guarantee for one-off games. Like, so a lot of those games are going for $120,000 to up to $140,000 a game right now. Obviously, Evansville can't afford that. So I think they just have to take a look in the – I think both need to take a look in the mirror. But I would say it's more on Evansville to make it happen, because they are from the bigger league. And it's a great offer, I think, in general, to just be able to build that into your schedule and not have it impact your budget.
Rocco Miller from the Field of 68, the Bracketeer, and pretty much everywhere else that works in the field of college basketball is here on WREF, the Brinker's Jewelers phone line, talking about Southern Indiana and Evansville basketball. And the schedules are out. We're going to start with the Screaming Eagles here. They have an MTE in Daytona Beach, the Boardwalk Battle. I know they had some other options. What do you think about this multi-team event? Incarnate Word, Illinois, Chicago, High Point, all in Daytona with Southern Indiana. What is this opportunity for USI, and is this a good poll for the Screaming Eagles?
Well, yeah, I think they received a little bit of compensation to play it. I think it started with them in High Point, and so that would make sense to me. But at the same time, they're not playing High Point in the first game, so I'm not exactly sure if the compensation was really the deciding factor. Yeah. You might remember in 2023, Southern Indiana participated in the CBI at the same venue. And part of the deal with the CBI, it's ran by a company called the Gazelle Group. Gazelle Group also runs this tournament. So one of the offers they have kind of interchangeably is if you play in the CBI, they really want you to come back and play in one of their preseason events. And that at least would have gotten Southern Indiana probably a no-cost entry. So financially, they probably got a great deal with Gazelle on the thing and committed really early. But I think going in now, they're clearly, you know, on paper, the fourth of the four. UIC, of course, is a growing and formidable program with Rob Eason. You know them well in the Missouri Valley. High Point just came off the NCAA tournament. They have a new coach, but they have an abundance of budget, and their NIL is more in line with the Atlantic 10 than the Big South. So they will be the favorites. And then Incarnate Word, I think a little bit of a sneaky team, not many are familiar with quite yet. But if you look at their roster, they have two starters that came from bigger schools averaging double figures. I think they spent somewhere around $1 million in NIL themselves and project to be a top three Southland team. So I think, you know, Southern Indiana opening against them, they'll definitely have their hands full in both games. I'm not necessarily opposed to doing it, though. I think one of the things I always preach, not everybody listens, believe me, is go test yourself in non-conference, especially in a tournament setting, because that's what your season comes down to later. When you get to the OVC tournament, and, you know, there are some teams I like in the OVC, but there's not going to be any overwhelming teams. Even if you're the 7 or the 8 seed, you know, you got to be ready to win day in and day out and beat good teams. So even if you go down there and don't play well, it's going to get your guys a little bit more mentally ready. You're going to learn more as a coach about your rotations and whatnot coming out of that event. And it's so early, you know, it's November 20th and 22nd. You've got plenty of time to tweak things in December to get ready for league play.
One more question about the USI schedule for you, Rocco. Really appreciate your time here. And talking about the rest of the schedule, I know we were talking about UE and the Missouri Valley Conference. Hey, Indiana State gave Southern Indiana a 2-2. They did get bought by Valparaiso. They have a bye game against Western Michigan as well. And they start with Butler. Does this qualify to you as really challenging yourself? Because it was a couple of years ago that USI played in the same season, Michigan State and Duke. And this year, like last year, bit of a different approach. They open up with a Big East team like they did last year, an overtime loss at DePaul. So they're going to try to run that back and maybe get a slightly different result against Butler to start the year this year. But how do you feel about those three games, Butler, Western Michigan, and Valpo for USI? Does that really qualify as, hey, this is a good way to ramp up for OVC play and to pocket some cash for the university?
Yeah, no, I think that's I think they did a nice job with the balance of it all. That's what it comes down to, is balance. When you take on the Dukes and the Michigan States and the Kansases of college basketball, you're effectively signing up for a 40-point blowout. You know, if you lose by 25, that's a win. But that's a little bit demoralizing. It can be if you play too many of them. Sometimes you don't have a choice, right? Some programs just need to raise, you know, $700,000 or more dollars, and they'll just go play a bunch of them. So this just tells me Southern Indiana was in a good place financially, and they were very selective. I think Butler makes a lot of sense being so local, but also just the fact that if you look at all of Power 5 basketball, nothing against Butler, but they're towards the bottom of the list. And so, hey, if you're going to have to take a Power 5 game on, let's call through those teams that are, you know, towards the bottom of their league, much like they did with DePaul. I think that DePaul game going to OT last year probably gave them a lot of confidence that, you know, they actually can beat one of these bottom end Power 5 squads. And Butler's so local, I think that's a great schedule game. And I think with the other ones, none of them are especially overwhelming. Valparaiso, if you play well, you figure you have a chance to win there. And then obviously, you know, finishing up the Indiana State series, Indiana State's actually projected 10th out of the 11 Valley teams this year. So that's very winnable, and they beat them before, as you know. And Western Michigan, of course, is a rebuilding program themselves. So, you know, if Southern Indiana can get things rolling here early, or just learn some things from the tournament in Daytona, they could finish December strong. And I know that opener with Little Rock at home, Little Rock, I think, will be the OVC favorite on December 18th. I mean, that's the game you got to be in tip-top shape for.
No doubt. Rocco Miller, college basketball guru right here on WREF, the Brinker's Jewelers phone line. Talking about USI schedule, let's talk about UE. You know, you mentioned the idea of, hey, when you play a big, bad, Power 4, Power 5 team, you're often signing up for a 40-point loss. Evansville has done that twice. Now, I'm not saying they're going to lose by 40, but the odds are stacked against them twice. To start the non-conference schedule, actually, with Purdue, and that's the season opener, November 4th, probably the number one overall team, and in fact, they are the number one overall team, I believe, and then Notre Dame to end the non-conference schedule as well. So when you look at that for the Aces, Aces fans listening to this saying, okay, sounds like Rocco is against mid-majors playing these games. How do you feel about David Ragland's schedule? Scheduling two of them, Purdue and Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, well, sometimes the money just speaks for itself. So it is all about balance, right? Like, you go play a game at Purdue, you know you're getting a much bigger check than even going to Butler for direct comparison. So, you know, sometimes you just can't pass that up. It's an opportunity to open the season on national TV. And the way Evansville cushions the blow is they come home and play two non-Division I teams with Calumet College in Oakland City, right? So they'll basically take their lumps there in the first night. I would expect a 40-point blowout there. I mean, there was a couple years ago where Purdue opened with a very good Stanford team, a Stanford team that actually arguably could have or should have beat Kansas in the 13-4 NCAA tournament later that year. Stanford lost that opener at Purdue by 50. So hard to have any. If Evansville's even competitive for 10 minutes, that's a win. But yeah, like, as we get into the meat and bones of the schedule, I think the rest of their schedule, if they play well enough, they have chances to win in each. Going to Western Kentucky, a little bit of a challenge, probably more talent at WKU, but yeah, you could still win that game. And Notre Dame, again, they are really trying to find themselves. They have an incredible backcourt individually, but they have not been able to figure it out as a team yet. Somewhat surprisingly, because they had a great run under Shrewsbury over at Penn State. So we'll see how that shakes out by the time we get to December 13. But otherwise, outside of the Purdue game, that could be intentional, right? Like, there's a lot of holes Evansville's trying to fill. You'll learn a lot playing a team like that. So again, it's all about balance. I'm not anti playing those games, sure, per se. And then in Evansville's tournament, the Paradise Jam,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of a hodgepodge of mid-majors. Oregon State, you know, they have a lot of guys they have to replace. Not an impossible opener to win. And then Iona or Akron, I think that's a big test either way in the second day, because Iona's loaded up with some good money and an NBA thinker in Dan Guerrero as their head coach. And Akron, of course, is the defending MAC champions with a lot of guys back. So I'm actually more nervous about Evansville's second game than their first. And then you'll see what you get on day three. But I think the other side has, you know, teams that are beatable, like UMass, I know, is in that group. So yeah, they'll learn a lot about themselves there. And I think for David Raglin, it's just been a struggle to keep guys at the school long enough. You know, we saw Hemi Churis, of course, a couple of years ago, just unbelievable talent. Pizzotto, unbelievable talent. But that's just the nature of college basketball right now. You have a couple stars like that pop, they're immediately gone by the time March Madness ends.
Yeah, looking up and down this schedule, and Rocco, some great analysis there. They've got some really tough mid-major games. Winnable, I guess, but they got whooped by Ball State last year, 80-43. Last year, they got pummeled by UT Arlington as well, 80-54. Played two Conference USA teams in Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee. But let's talk about UT Arlington. I'm hearing that UE might like to play this team because they might actually be joining the Missouri Valley Conference. Is there anything to that? Are those rumors substantiated? Is there a win to those sales? UT Arlington to the Missouri Valley Conference.
Well, I think those conversations started a couple years back. And so the fact that it hasn't moved forward makes me hesitate and pause now. I think when it first came out, it made some sense. You know, it was at the same time that the Missouri Valley was adding Belmont and Murray State, or just right after that. And, of course, I think the thinking there would be get the Dallas marketplace, et cetera. And I think UT Arlington themselves, from everything I've been told over these last couple cycles, they really want the move as well. But I think the Valley has maybe paused a little bit, and some of the discussions I've had, not directly with the league, but just with some good intel sources I have, is simply that in Dallas, you know, UT Arlington, you know, they do a good job. They have a great coach right now. I think KT Turner's got an amazing future as a coach. But you're kind of like the last fiddle in Division I in town. You know, SMU's in the ACC now. North Texas does a great job in Denton as an American Conference team. And then UT Arlington, even though they're great, you know, they have great location and all that, they just don't have the same kind of juice in town. You know, fans tend to kind of forget about them locally. It'd be cool for Valley the fans to come down and pack their place as a road destination. But I think that's some of that stuff has maybe caused the conference to slow down on the invitation. Just my two cents. Do not have any evidence. For all I know, they could announce it tomorrow, and I also wouldn't be shocked. But I do believe there's a reason it hasn't happened yet.
Well, Rocco, I feel like there would be a lot that would have to happen to surprise you, because you're so privy on all this stuff. With that said, I was shocked when, talking about conference realignment, when Tennessee Tech announced that they were leaving the Ohio Valley Conference. Surprised for a few reasons. One, it's not a shock that an OVC team was poached by a higher league. In this case, Tennessee Tech going to the SoCon. I thought it might be someone like Southeast Missouri, for example, with a little bit more money. But Tech is also an original OVC member. So was this a surprise? And then talking about USI and their conference, what's the next move for the OVC?
I agree with you. It caught me off guard when it first came out. I wasn't really thinking about an OVC team getting poached. But when you look at football, it starts to make sense pretty quick. I'm looking at the preseason rankings for the league. I think OVC is combined with Big South, if I'm not mistaken, in football. So Tennessee Tech's supposed to have they're supposed to have a strong year. I can't remember if they're ranked or they're right next to the rankings. And they've really invested in football upon some deeper research. And so this is certainly a football move. But it also tells me some bigger things for the SoCon about trying to improve their football footprint. I think most sports fans think of the SoCon as an incredible college basketball league. I certainly do. And so it makes you kind of wonder what the future of the league is. I'm actually going to go down to SoCon Media Day. It's October 1st. It's one of the early ones in Greenville. So I have a lot of questions myself. So we'll look to get to the bottom of it in about a month. But, it's also interesting, too, because there's because UNT Greensboro, who's done phenomenal over the last couple decades in the SoCon, it does not I don't believe they have football. If I remember right, there is a strong chance. Now rumors are saying they could join the Atlantic Sun. And so you just kind of wonder where the SoCon's heading. They just have such a great set of brands at the top with, you know, Chattanooga being the NIT champions. We talked about Samford's run lately. Bucky's now at Texas A&M. Furman's been incredible. Obviously, East Tennessee State's had great coaches, and the list goes on. So many great histories. So, you know, I'm a little nervous that the future of the SoCon could look different. But maybe at the other token too, Brad, I think anytime you have realignment, you have to reimagine the future. So if a reinvested Tennessee Tech suddenly gets good in basketball, you know, we're gonna like that league again. And so things are always ever changing. And I try not to judge a move on its cover. That's why I immediately go into research mode.
Well, if Tennessee Tech gets good at basketball, that I would say is a big if. They haven't been to the NCAA tournament in more than 60 years, the third longest active NCAA tournament drought in the nation. So that's one of the reasons I was really caught off guard. I know that football is king and the money is in football and they're supposed to be good this year, but even still, I was surprised.
Right.
Again, Rocco Miller here on WREF. Beth DeVush, the commissioner for the Ohio Valley Conference, already said that they're not going to stick with 10. Once TTU leaves, they're going to be looking for another team. Have you considered who the Ohio Valley Conference could add as a conference rival for USI?
Yeah, so I think there's been a couple of rumblings about Division II teams. I'm certainly thinking Division II in the expansion role, and I'm not sure if I have the names right, but I've heard. I know UIndy was invited about a year or two ago and eventually turned it down. Maybe they resurface. I think I've heard, yeah. Lincoln Memorial's been mentioned a lot. In fact, they might even have paperwork already. And then I want to say Franklin Pierce as well. So anyway, there's probably a name or two I'm not mentioning, but I would just think in general, high level Division II coming up to D1, like you saw with Southern Indiana and Lindenwood.
Yeah, no doubt. And certainly in more sports than one, USI has done well in Division I, still looking for that postseason luck in men's basketball, but they had plenty of it in women's basketball. Lindenwood the same. They've been making the adjustment, and now the transition period is only 3 years, so it would be a little bit more palatable for some high-level D2s, I suppose, at this point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think what's going to continue to happen and why it's not being announced really quickly is they are going to start making the parameters a little more financially difficult to make the jump. So, you know, the entry, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the barrier of entry for like Lindenwood in Southern Indiana 3 years ago is going to be a much higher barrier just in terms of pure dollars, because that's what Division I college athletics has become. For the next set of teams that come up. And I think that's, you know, there's a lot of schools that really want to do it, but they've got to have all their finances in a row to make it possible. And I think that's where you're going to see more and more barriers of entry.
Rocco, I want to get this from you before I let you go. And again, I really appreciate your time. Let's talk UE first. We'll finish with USI. David Ragland coming in on another year off of an extension. The Aces seem to be trending up, but they're still looking for that real success to try to get to the top of the Missouri Valley Conference. They were a losing team last year. They were a losing team the year before. David Ragland hasn't had a winning season, but he's gotten progressively better. 11-21 a season ago. For Aces fans listening, what is a fair expectation? If you want to give me a record, fine. If you want to give me a standing in the Missouri Valley Conference, that's fine. But give me some benchmarks on what a fair barometer, a fair expectation would be for Aces fans this upcoming season.
That's an excellent question. I think right now they're just in an interesting spot. You know, there's three or four guys that played a lot that are back in the fold for this year. They brought in, you know, we'll see if Hemingway is back to full strength. I know he missed last season, but I covered Clemson's run to the Elite Eight down in Los Angeles during the NCAA tournament. He was a role player at Clemson. I mean, that's no slouch at all. He's been at multiple Power Five programs. So obviously he's looking at Evansville as a chance to become a star late in his career. You know, they have some interesting pieces. The 6'11 Aussie kid has my interest. I'm not sure how much he can contribute. But as it pertains to now, I mean, they do look good enough to be feisty. Like, they're projected higher than Indiana State and Valpo in the 9th spot now, because you don't have Missouri State in the league. And, you know, they're in the same ballpark as maybe like a UIC for eighth. But I think right now there's a big gap between that top seven and then, you know, at least on paper. And then you go to UIC and Evansville and Indiana State with Valpo closing out the projections. So, but the other thing is on the top end, there is no obvious, you know, Drake-level team yet. I think we'll have one by the end of the Missouri Valley Conference season. Maybe that's Bradley. Illinois State loves their team. Murray State spent a ton on their team. And I sneaky like Belmont personally in the league. But my larger point is simply that there's nothing overwhelming on paper. So if Evansville clicks right and clicks early, pulls off some early wins, it's not impossible to get into the top six of the league, which I think would be a tremendous jump for Coach Ragland. So we'll see how it plays out. But I think the expectations coming in is somewhere around eighth or ninth. And then anything below that, you know, especially since it's his fourth year, could be problematic.
No, you're right. I think that would be a very significant jump. Same question for Southern Indiana. If you want to talk about standing in the league or record, I think standing in the league is probably a more fair barometer for these mid-majors because it's all about league play. But coming up on yet another season, but this time it's different for USI because they're done with the transition process. Now they're eligible for the NCAA tournament as their first full member D1 season. What is a fair expectation for a Screaming Eagle fan listening right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now the league itself has three teams that are clearly at the top. Little Rock is a very formidable team. In fact, probably might crack my top 25 mid-major list. It's really rare lately for an OVC team to be able to do. They're right on the cut right now. I have to make a decision next week, so stay tuned there. But they're an excellent roster talent wise. They have to still go out and build chemistry together and perform. FEMO I like as well for several reasons. They have a lot of glue back, and Brad Korn's a great coach, as you guys all know. And then, of course, Edwardsville, the defending champ, they have a lot to replace, including Rayshon Taylor. But, again, there's enough there on that roster. I think that's your top three. And then there's a little bit of a gap there for a team to make a move. I think, you know, right now Southern Indiana's in that next group of teams. But they're just, it's so hard to say because everybody at the top of Southern Indiana's roster, when you try to project a rotation, is brand new to the program. So it could go a million directions. I think it's going to be really critical to get all these personalities together. I know there's a great variety of backgrounds. You got a Bethune-Cookman, really highly rated player. You've got a couple of NAIA guys, JUCO, guys from higher levels. So it's going to be really up to Stan to get these guys to buy into each other, stay out of trouble, and just focus on basketball and focus on playing good team basketball. And then, of course, it's a one-bid league, right, Brad? So it's all about how you play at the OVC tournament. Even if you go 8-12 in league, just qualify for that OVC tournament. None of these teams are overwhelming. If you play well that one week, you're going to the tournament. And that's so exciting for the Screaming Eagles. I do not think they can beat Little Rock and SEMO in the full regular season 20 games. However, there's nothing stopping me from saying they can't beat them one night in Evansville.
Hey, one shining moment could be this upcoming moment for USI men's basketball, their first full member D1 season. Rocco, you're getting me extra excited for the college basketball season. Can't thank you enough. That is Rocco Miller from the Bracketeer and from the Field of 68 and everywhere else college basketball, college hoops bracketologist and analyst. Love to have him on talking about schedules and everything else happening in college basketball. Rocco, thank you so much. You're the man. Can't wait to do it again with you soon.
Thanks, Brad. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. Thank you very much. Can't wait for the season.
You got it. With that, we take a step aside. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Ref's Call, driven by D. Patrick Nissan on WREF 97.7 FM. The Ref, always the right call.